You're listening to the FQXI podcast.
Now, that quantum experiment in Delft might have upset Einstein by proving that the world is truly spooky, but he may now get his revenge. One of the biggest puzzles facing physicists is why we don't see quantum effects around us in the everyday world. Electrons can be in two places at once, according to quantum mechanics. Well, I'm just stuck here, recording this podcast, when I'd far rather be simultaneously lying on a beach in Puerto Rico.
Ah, yes. So what is it that causes the quantum world to change into being the boring classical world we see around us? The answer could be to do with Einstein's theory of relativity. Igor Pekovsky, at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, and FQXI's Czeslaw Bruckner and others, have been investigating whether a phenomenon identified by Einstein, time dilation, could be destroying fragile quantum states. Reporter Corinne Pikema spoke with Pekovsky to find out more.
For many decades now, physicists have been grappling with a big fundamental question. Why does the quantum world look so very different from the day-to-day world that we experience? Quantum mechanics describes the behavior of subatomic particles with great precision and has been proven time and again experimentally. Yet its laws are more than a little confusing to most of us. The implications of one of the most widely known quantum phenomena, superposition, seems particularly hard to imagine. According to this law, a particle can behave like a wave, which theoretically means that it can be in multiple places at one time. Though we might wish we could be in several states or places at once occasionally, we don't observe this kind of behavior outside of the realm of particle physics. So something must be happening at the transition between the quantum and classical worlds that destroys such quantum states. Einstein's extremely influential theory of general relativity, which is celebrating its centenary this year, might once again hold the key to uncovering a mystery. According to Igor Pekovsky and his colleagues in Vienna and Queensland, the slowing of time near massive objects might be the cause of the destruction of quantum phenomena. I spoke with Pekovsky, who currently works as a postdoctoral researcher at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics in Cambridge in Massachusetts, on Skype. To help understand the new findings, I asked him to begin by explaining gravity according to Einstein's theory of general relativity.
Before Einstein, our view of gravity was dominated by Newton's theory. And basically, Newton's theory of gravity is that gravity is something like a force between different particles or systems. And this force becomes stronger the more massive the systems are. So planets attract each other and apple falls on Earth and so forth. Einstein realized that this is not the full story, actually. So he was thinking about just very conceptual problems with such Newtonian theory. And at some point, he realized that gravity is somewhat something different than just simply a force. And then finally, when he formulated the theory of relativity, general theory of relativity, it really explains gravity as a geometric theory. Geometric in the sense that the whole space in which we live in is actually changed whenever we put a massive object inside of it. So masses don't simply attract each other as a Newtonian theory, but rather they really bend the space around them such that other masses kind of feel this kind of bending, other systems, and then they follow this kind of bent space.
An easy way to visualize what this bending of space looks like is to imagine a jeu de boule ball on a thin rubber sheet. Around the ball, the sheet is curved and stretched a little, and when we add a lighter object, say a marble, the curvature of the sheet means that the marble falls towards the jeu de boule ball. But this is not the full story. Einstein described gravity as a bending of space and time.
The bending of time is a little harder to visualize, but it's in some sense exactly the same. The Earth bends the time flow around it, so it alters a little bit this kind of notion we have about how quickly time progresses. And so what happens is that if you're closer to the Earth, there is more of this type of bending, and so time is a bit more stretched in some sense. What we mean by that is really that if you compare different clocks, one clock which is closer to Earth and one clock which is further away, they will not go at the same rate. and the one closer to Earth will actually go a bit slower. And that's true about anything. It's not just true about a physical clock that we can measure, but it's really true about any system which is evolving in time, like our heartbeat or any kind of dynamics. This is why we really speak about bending of time itself and not just simply a change of our physics of clocks.
Altered time flow as a result of massive objects is called time dilation. The practical implications of the slowing of time near massive objects is that people who live at higher altitudes will age a little more quickly than someone who lives at sea level. Bukowski and his colleagues think that this slowing of time closer to Earth might be what destroys the fragile quantum states. But first, Bukowski sets out the issue of the quantum to classical transition.
This kind of so-called quantum to classical transition by itself has nothing to do with gravity, but it's more of a conceptual question about quantum theory itself. Now, when we say quantum theory, what we really mean are laws of nature which were discovered about 100 years ago, that describe the smallest particles that we know. People developed a full framework, a full understanding of what's going on, which was then later called quantum mechanics. Everything we knew about physics before quantum theory is what we call classical physics today. And so it's different, for example, in the quantum world. So according to quantum laws, there can be very seemingly counterintuitive behavior. One example is the so-called superposition principle, where a particle can, for example, not just be in a definite state, but it can also be in a so-called quantum superposition of both. In other words, some people also say this is the wave-particle duality, that the particle sometimes behaves like a wave, sometimes like a particle. So all of these words are just grounded in quantum theory that predicts a much more rich behavior, a much more unusual kind of physical laws than what we experience in our everyday life. This mismatch between what we experience in our everyday life and how the laws, fundamental laws of nature are at the small scales, is what we call this quantum to classical transition. In some sense, we need to understand how can it be that we don't see this strange behavior on very large scales, so in our macroscopic everyday world, but we see them all the time in experiments for very small particles. So somehow these kind of some quantum behavior is lost as systems become bigger and bigger.
Quantum phenomena are extremely fragile and can be destroyed by interaction with the environment.
This is called decoherence in everyday literature. And there's many models of decoherence. Usually it's some kind of interaction of a particle that you're interested in with something else, which is really something that's outside of the particle. You just can't really control it, and it just happens to interact with the system. And what we found in our work is something of that sort. So it's also decoherence, but it's induced by this Einsteinian theory of relativity. It's induced by time dilation. So what we found is that if you build up a particle of many individual constituents, then what happens is that all these constituents are actually evolving in time by themselves. So for example, one can think of these constituents as being thermally vibrating. So if you have a big molecule, this molecule is never exactly at rest, but it consists of many individual atoms, and all these atoms are just vibrating all the time at very small scales, so they're just jiggling a little bit. This usually is of no big relevance, but we know this is the case. This is what we call when a system has a certain temperature. But so what we found is that this kind of vibration, which is induced by temperature or anything else, is affected by time dilation in the presence of Earth's gravitational field. From that, we found that this slowing down of these vibrations due to time dilation actually affects the quantum nature of the overall molecule or a composite system. So it's a little bit of a logical chain here. But finally, what we find is that if you place some kind of composite system, so a particle which consists of other particles inside of it, if you place that in some gravitational field, it is exceedingly hard to sustain the quantum coherence of this particle because of time dilation.
This work opens up numerous avenues for highly valuable experimental exploration.
I'm pretty sure in the next couple of decades there will be experiments that really test this kind of interplay of quantum theory and non-Newtonian gravity. The one experiment we suggested in the paper was to really take a very complex molecule and put it in a superposition of something like micrometers and then really see this decoherence. This is a little bit similar to experiments that are already being performed in Vienna as well in the group of Markus Arndt. They take very, very big molecules and put them in superposition. Now, the molecules that are needed to see this effect we're describing are still much bigger than what they can do in Vienna. But it's a possible path that we describe, and I'm sure eventually maybe it could be possible that this should work out. Another way is, I said in the beginning that this effect really stems from time dilation, meaning that any clock is affected, so clocks really learn slower. So one could also think of an experiment, instead of taking a complex molecule, one just takes a single atom, and inside of it one uses internal states as clock degrees of freedom. So usually, anyway, people use atomic clocks as very precise clocks. And if one combines that with the technology of creating quantum superpositions at different heights, which people also do in so-called atomic fountains, then this type of effect, a very similar effect, should also kick in and maybe could be visible in such experiments as well.
Once such experiments are a reality, physicists can start to shed more light on the major theories. But Pekovsky doesn't expect we'll need to drastically rethink what we know today.
These kind of experiments help us to at least shed a little bit of light on the fundamental concepts that come into both theories, and at the very least just to show us that they both can come together and nothing strange happens. So in the most likely scenario, experiments, when they probe these kind of phenomena, should see something, well, as we describe, for example, or there's other ideas of other people as well, but really something that follows from our understanding of physics today. So I would expect there wouldn't be any clash or any kind of surprising things happening outside of physics as we know it. But having said that, this is really a regime where we have absolutely no experiments so far at all. So actually probing that really, I think, helps us, even if it just confirms that the mathematics is fine, but it really helps us to somehow understand a little better how the different concepts from these two really seemingly different theories come together a little bit.
Understanding the quantum to classical transition has long been very difficult. Now, slowly but surely, theoretical physicists like Pekovsky and his colleagues are starting to pinpoint to mechanisms that cause quantum properties to break down in larger objects. Their findings can now be exploited in experiments, and though the experimental setups might not yet seem straightforward to implement, Pekovsky is optimistic about the future.
What I just want to stress as well is that this kind of phenomena where time dilation comes into this quantum coherence really may show in different experimental settings. All these experiments are pretty hard to do, but I think they are reasonable to at least expect that they will be realistic maybe in the coming years or decades. So I'm pretty sure that something like that should be possible, and I'm excited to just explore what other types of experiments one could do.
Thank you to Igor Pekovsky for chatting with Karin Pikama. Regular listeners will remember that on the last podcast, Karin interviewed Keith Schwab about his investigation of similar effects in the lab. On the podcast page, fqxi.org/community/podcast, you'll find a link to that interview and her profile of Schwab, which includes Pekovsky too.